Kyle, did you have a good Father's Day?
Yeah, I did. I actually think I took a nap at some point. It was pretty awesome.
Oh, those naps are cool now.
Oh, especially, yeah, when you got kids, they're even more cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Kyle, let's get caught up on what's going on in state government. First of all, as you know, the redistricting lines for the state were released last week by the Republicans and the Democrats. Interesting takes. Both sides said each other's maps are wrong and need to be changed. I did find it interesting that Walt Sorg, who's a Democratic candidate for Joan Boyer's seat, thought that the maps kind of disengage the Republicans from some portions of the map, including the district that he wants to represent.
Yeah, well, and I think that's, you know, I think a lot of talk between both the Republicans and the Democrats have been a lot of posturing and a lot of ignoring of kind of what the key facts are in the redistricting process, and that's that legislators are in charge of deciding where they want to represent. I mean, in a lot of other states, we have situations where independent commissions redraw the redistricting maps. But in Michigan, it's the party in power that gets to do it. And, you know, you actually pass a bill that passes the House and the Senate gets signed by the governor. And so, you know, I think Walt is taking advantage of a situation here and pointing something out. But, you know, it's more, I think, of a headline grab than anything. I don't really see that the districts in Ingham County are drastically different than they were last time. I think the big change is that Clinton and Shiawassee County will probably get Rick Jones as their next state senator when they reelect in the year 2014. But outside of that, it's I don't think it's really anything to jump up and down about.
So should we assume that the Republican map is going to be the map?
I think so, but I think there's going to be an exception. I think that's in the city of Detroit. The drawings of the districts in the city of Detroit on the House side were fairly startling. You had a lot of, and I know that Detroit's lost a lot of population and that they were going to lose seats, and, you know, that's kind of expected. But we had a situation in Detroit where we've got one district where there's three sitting House people who would be running against each other. We've got two others where we've got people running against each other, and yet we have vacant seats there, too, where people would have to, you know, where there's nobody representing. So the Detroit districts are a mess. It shows to me that there wasn't any planning between Democrats and Republicans on that portion of the map. And, you know, because typically when you're redrawing these maps, you want to protect, their number one criteria is to protect those people in office. You know, you want to protect the incumbents because you want their votes. Even though they're Democrats, you don't want them to get too excited because then they might sue and they might stretch the process out, and then people got to spend money on attorneys, and it's really a pain in the neck. And so you really want to prevent lawsuits, so you try and make Democrats happy where possible. Well, they didn't make anybody happy in the city of Detroit. It was just a complete disaster. They drew odd-looking districts down there that have really ticked them off. So something is going on behind the scenes there.
Kyle, I'm surprised that a nonpartisan group isn't in charge of this. Why isn't there more of a push for that?
Well, it's because the party that always makes the push for that is the one that isn't in power, and they end up it ends up not being a long-term rallying cry. It just comes more of a partisan edge, you know. And there's just really been no substantial push by anybody to make it happen. The majority party never has any incentive to do something, and so it's kind of left to a citizen action group or kind of a broad sweeping citizen reform package. And the last one that tried that was when the Democrats tried to sneak on that enormous change to the Constitution a couple years ago that got thrown out of the Supreme Court because it was just too massive in scale. So, you know, it just hasn't been the push, Tony, unfortunately.
And when you look at the congressional redistricting, Levin and Gary Peters would go up against each other in the same district, and I don't think Gary Peters would stand a chance.
No, and the reason he wouldn't is not just because of the longevity there of Sandy Levin, but I mean, there's hardly any of his current district in that new district. He's got Bloomfield Township where he lives and Southfield Township, which isn't very big, and all the rest of that's Sandy Levin. So, yeah, he'd get crushed unless, you know, Sandy Levin decides to retire or something, you know, which is, I guess, possible as well. Or, you know, the other option is for Gary Peters to move a little bit and he would have to run against Thad McCotter, and, you know, because more of his district's now going to be in what Thad McCotter's district's like. But that's going to be hard because it's a little bit more Republican than it had been before, and, you know, it's still got all of Thad McCotter's district, too, so that wouldn't be a gimme. So, yeah, and that's the advantage of being in the Republican, or being in the majority party. You know, somebody was going to get roped in together. You know, you're losing one congressional seat here in Michigan. We're going from 15 to 14. So, you know, that's inevitable. Somebody's going to get roped in, and obviously it was going to be Democrats because the Republicans were in charge. And so Gary Peters drew the short straw. I don't know if you noticed that, Tony, but did you see how whacked out the, you know, the congressional lines were in southeast Michigan with the Detroit district sweeping up into Oakland County?
I thought that was really surprising, and I thought that was surprising from the aspect that it's the Republicans, you know, who allowed that to happen.
Yeah, and you know what it is, and I know that looks really super funny on you know, when you're actually looking at it, but, you know, according to federal law, they have to create districts that have a majority of the representation be of, you know, a minority population. And so they needed to get a district where 55% at least of the population were African American. And since the city of Detroit lost so much population, they had to stretch these districts out into the suburbs, into Southfield, and then up into you know, Farmington Hills and stuff. And that's just where the minority population was. So that's why they're so strange looking. And then you don't want to break township and city lines, and since city boundaries look so odd anyway, you get wacky looking congressional maps. So yeah, that I just thought they looked kind of ugly, but that's kind of what they had to do, unfortunately.
So when will all the redistricting be finalized?
Not this week, but next week. Because they're going to do it before they get on their summer recess. They don't want this hanging over their head over the months of July and August, and give the Democrats more time to draw better maps that have you know, fewer line breaks. So they're going to get this done in the next 2 weeks.
A new bridge from Detroit to Windsor has been at the forefront of the news since the Mackinac event. And now, after, I say, weeks of bickering about it, are you saying it's going to be put on the back burner?
Yeah, it is for the summer. They'll start it back up in the fall, and I think the reason is because I think the legislators are hearing from their constituents the product of the advertising campaign put on by the Ambassador Bridge people. You know, they don't want the bridge at all because they don't want the competition, and they don't want this new bridge to basically shut them out of the truck traffic market and, you know, substantially reduce what kind of revenues they're getting right now. And so, you know, the public is really kind of confused because of this advertising campaign, and I think that the proponents of the bridge are going to regroup and probably do something of their own, I would imagine, to try and, you know, educate the public on their point of view on why we need a bridge and why it's important and why taxpayers aren't going to get stuck with anything, and kind of lay their case out. Because right now, the legislators who would be voting for this are hearing from their constituents, you know, why am I hearing this message? You know, why are you guys want a public entity to compete with private? You know, they're reiterating all the talking points from the Ambassador Bridge people, and, you know, there's just no movement. There's no support in the Senate. This thing is, you know, stalled. I mean, all the oxygen this spring had got sucked up with the budget and the tax reform plan, and, you know, it went really well for Snyder, you know, in the first half of the year, those two items, but there just wasn't enough there for the bridge, too, and so he's just going to try again in the fall and, you know, probably have a bit more success.
All right, before we let you go, what's going to be at the forefront on the table for the legislation this week?
Well, I think that, you know, outside of redistricting, I think we got to keep an eye on the teacher tenure reforms that are going on in the state Senate. I don't think that they're going to pass it out, you know, before the end of the summer, but it's still possible. You know, there's a lot of different things on the table as to how do we grade effective teachers. And, you know, how much are we going to put in this legislation? How much are we going to micromanage individual school districts and tell them the process by which we can, you know, fire a teacher quicker if they're not viewed as being effective? And so I think there's going to be a lot of discussion on that. And, you know, I think the Republicans may also try and get some legislation through that the unions won't like and say that it's anti-collective bargaining, whether it's Public Act 312 dealing with police and fire, or PLAs, project labor agreements. I think both of those are things that the unions will want to look out for, because I think the Republicans are going to may want to sneak something through before the summer recess.
Kyle Malin is the editor of the MERS newsletter. If you want to know what's going on in politics, you definitely have to look at that as a resource. MIRSnews.com is the web address. Thanks so much, Kyle.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Tony.